Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Go Long, Why Long-Term Thinking is Your Best Short-Term Strategy by Dennis Carey, Brian Dumain, Michael Yuseem, and Rodney Zemmel. Foreword by David M. Rubenstein. Narrated by Daniel Thomas May. Foreword. David M. Rubenstein, co-founder and co-executive chairman, The Carlyle Group. In the 1960s, with the rapid growing institutional and retail participation in public equity markets, much investor interest developed in the short-term stock performance of public companies. Investors were far less interested in holding on to AT&T or GM shares for a generation, and much more interested in moving in and out of stocks based on perceived or actual short-term earnings growth. This phenomenon produced an exponential rise in the 1960s of institutional public equities analysts covering every development in a public company's performance. The popular investment trend seemed largely to be one of moving frequently in and out of stocks. Long-term holds were increasingly viewed as the province of bank trust departments. The phenomenon of seeking short-term gains grew even more dramatically in the subsequent decades as much more money from growing pension funds, IRAs, 401ks, and mutual funds flowed into the institutional and retail equity markets. For a great many investors, the focus was largely on the next quarter's earnings, for that would affect the near-term stock price. A long-term perspective was to focus on earnings 2 and 3 quarters down the road, and that long-term perspective did not appeal to many of those investors. Other than Warren Buffett and a few of his followers, no one seemed to focus on what might happen 5 and 10 years down the road. This relatively short-term focus on near-term earnings inevitably resulted in public company CEOs focusing their own attention on meeting short-term earnings expectations. It could be argued that this interest in public companies' short-term performance was not wholly bad. Stock markets flourished, creating enormous levels of wealth for investors. The U.S. economy dramatically expanded and blossomed, despite the inevitable recessions and crises that occurred during the 1960s through the turn of the century. Many new companies, aided by well-funded venture capitalists, were created and transformed industries. Older companies were reinvented and modernized, aided by private equity investors, and the American economy truly dominated the global economy in the last half of the 20th century in a way few economies had ever dominated the global economy. But then came the 21st century. Existing competition from European and other developed economies intensified. The emerging markets, most particularly China, challenged American companies and the U.S. economy as they had never before been challenged. And many well-known, old-line U.S. companies that had focused on next quarter's earnings suddenly had fewer weapons to compete in the newer world. Continued American global dominance was not inevitable. Fortunately for the U.S. economy, a number of entrepreneurs toward the end of the past century, but principally in the early part of this century, tried to reinvent the world a bit by focusing more on longer-term goals and less on next quarter's earnings. And these companies prospered in ways that those focused principally on the next quarter could not have anticipated. The best known of these longer-term focused companies, Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Microsoft, overcame competitors focused on the short term. These new companies typically sprang from the vision of a founder dedicated to building a better product or providing a better service with little focus on short-term concerns. The focus was on 10 years down the road, not 10 weeks or even 10 months. These founders, with the strength of their convictions and near-manic pursuit of longer-term growth and excellence, often gave short shrift to the concern of institutional analysts or investors about short-term earnings. Perhaps most famously, the Wall Street herd derided Amazon's lack of concern about near-term quarterly earnings. Jeff Bezos, the company's CEO, was focused on long-term growth and essentially ignored analyst demands for short-term earnings. The result is now well known. Amazon became one of the world's most valuable companies, and Bezos the world's richest man, in large part because of his focus on producing earnings not in the next quarter, but 5, 10, and 20 years down the road. While the U.S. economy has no doubt benefited in this century from CEO founders like Jeff Bezos, who are able to focus on the longer term, the truth is that most public company CEOs are not visionary founders. Rather, they are increasingly focused on next quarter's earnings. And the focus is becoming more intense than ever before for a variety of reasons. The tenure for most public company CEOs is shorter than in the past, and shorter tenure inevitably means CEOs tend to focus on shorter-term objectives. Hedge funds with quite short-term investment goals have increasingly become large investors in public company stocks, and they prompt these companies to also focus on the short term. Some of these hedge funds, along with other investment vehicles, are taking on the role of activist investors. Activist is now often a euphemism for short-term investment goals. Well-capitalized, algorithm-based, computer-driven investors are growing in market importance and size, and their focus is inevitably toward serving short-term gains. Plaintiffs' lawyers are invariably focusing their attention on short-term earnings declines that may not have been anticipated by markets. Few lawsuits are filed against public companies for failing to project sufficiently long-term earnings and corporate growth objectives. Regulatory oversight from federal and state governments also invariably focuses on short-term earnings surprises, more typically on the downside. Here, too, regulators do not penalize CEOs or companies for failing to have solid 5- and 10-year earnings growth plans. The consequence of these more modern phenomena seem to be binary. CEOs of public companies are paying more attention than ever to the next quarter's earnings. Or those CEOs who can control whether a company should go public are choosing to keep a company private for as long as possible so they can avoid the public company need to produce higher and higher quarterly earnings. Today, although the number of companies in the United States is significantly higher than 20 years ago, the number of public companies is down by 50%, from roughly 7,300 to 3,600. Of course, every company does not have the opportunity to go or stay private. Those companies that are public often have little choice in remaining public, and thereby their CEOs are increasingly subjecting themselves to the just described modern pressures to focus on the short term. Why is this really a problem? Great companies prosper by focusing on longer-term objectives, by spending money on research and development and capital improvements. And economies, and thereby societies, prosper by having companies grow, innovate, and improve over longer periods rather than just next quarter. A number of financial industry leaders have in recent years tried to point out the increasing dangers of short-termism to companies and economies' futures, and they have succeeded in making the issue one that is appropriate for serious public dialogue. Unfortunately, the increasing public attention to the issue has to date had less measurable impact than might be desired. Perhaps some incremental and much-needed impact will be achieved by a serious look at some of the public company CEOs who, in the current short-term atmosphere, chose, at some financial risk to their companies and themselves, to focus on the long term. They might well be viewed as the corporate profiles in courage. Four experienced business practitioners and scholars, Dennis Carey, Michael Youssim, Rodney Zemel, and Brian Demain, have in fact provided just such a serious look. In Go Long, they have provided a well-researched analysis of how six current-generation public company CEOs successfully ignored short-term concerns. The results in all of these cases were stronger companies and better contributors to the well-being of their employees, suppliers, customers, and shareholders. For anyone who is concerned about the importance of forcing longer-term objectives into a public company short-term mindset, and who wants to learn more about some of the heroes of this effort, this book is a godsend. Indeed, it should be mandatory reading for the CEOs and boards of all public companies. And perhaps because of this book and public conversations that might result, the tide will begin turning, even if slowly at first, as longer-term corporate goals replace shorter-term goals. And if that is the case, the authors will have truly done a public service by showing public company CEOs that it is best to focus on long-term goals if they want to achieve short-term goals, and if they want to build great and enduring companies. Introduction. Every year, the nation's top business leaders convene at the CEO Academy, a gathering originally founded by one of our co-authors, Dennis Carey, and now offered in collaboration with the Wharton School and McKinsey & Company. Many business ideas get bandied about at this off-the-record gathering in New York City, but the CEOs who have attended over the past couple of years seemed particularly fixated on one very important topic: managing for the long term. As it turns out, they aren't alone. Top executives today are feeling squeezed by activist hedge funds and institutional investors who are constantly pressuring them to boost quarterly earnings, increase dividends, and buy back shares, all at the expense of future growth. A 2014 global survey of more than 600 C-suite executives and directors conducted by the nonprofit Focusing Capitalism on the Long Term, FCLT, reported that two-thirds of those surveyed said pressure for short-term results had increased over the previous 5 years. As a result, R&D budgets have been cut, new product launches delayed, and productive and creative people laid off. The FCLT survey is just one more piece in a mountain of evidence that suggests many American investors are putting enormous pressure on CEOs to make a quick buck. Short-termism, it seems, is everywhere. According to the New York Stock Exchange, the average holding period for public shares has dropped from 5.1 years in the mid-1970s to 7.3 months today. This is partly due to the rise of high-frequency programmed trading, but even some institutional investors are making short-term bets. After all, they have to answer to their own investors, who also demand robust short-term gains now. Activist investors, too, are playing a critical role in this chase for quick money. In 2017, Nelson Peltz of Trion targeted Procter & Gamble, Barry Rosenstein of JANA Partners attacked Whole Foods, and Mantle Ridge's Paul Hilal went after the railroad CSX, just to name a few of the more notable activist investor attacks. And while these activist hedge funds represent only about 1% of the equity market, their influence is outsized, as they have been able to accumulate massive war chests thanks to low interest rates and the banking sector's willingness to accept very high leverage ratios. As of 2015, this group in aggregate had $122 billion under management, up from only about $2 billion in 2001. Sometimes activists can play an important and positive role in improving the performance of a lagging company, but more typically when they attack, they are essentially saying that management and the board are not maximizing shareholder return today. They call for share buybacks, spin-offs, increased dividends, and board restructurings, all aimed at boosting shareholder returns in the short run. Ironically, a study by McKinsey found that share repurchases seldom have any lasting positive effect on total shareholder return. These investors argue that they are following a standard capitalist formula, forcing managers to drive down costs and boost productivity, which ultimately leads to increasing levels of wealth. It certainly doesn't help matters that the stock market has historically rewarded CEOs who return capital to investors through dividends and stock buybacks, rough proxies for short-term strategies that keep investors happy. Goldman Sachs found that since 1991, those S&P stocks offering the highest combined dividend and share buyback yields have returned an annualized 15.5%. That's a higher rate of return than that of the S&P 500 index in total and also, unfortunately, outpaces the returns generated by a number of forward-thinking companies that invested in their future through R&D and other capital expenditures. The good news is that there is growing evidence that long-term thinking pays in the long run. The McKinsey Global Institute examined the performance of 615 large and mid-cap U.S. publicly listed companies from 2001 to 2015, looking at patterns of investment, growth, earnings quality, and earnings management. This lens allowed McKinsey to separate long-term companies from others and then compare their relative performance. Among its findings was that the revenue of long-term firms, which spent on average 50% more on R&D, cumulatively grew on average 47% more than that of the other firms, and with less volatility. Cumulatively, the earnings of long-term firms also grew 36% more on average. Not only did these long-term businesses increase profits, but they were also engines of job growth, adding nearly 12,000 more jobs on average than less forward-thinking firms. The study concludes that had all U.S. publicly listed firms created as many jobs as the long-term firms, the American economy would have added more than 5 million jobs and another $1 trillion of GDP over the past decade. But what about that Goldman Sachs study? Well, although 1 year of performance does not constitute a trend, the situation might be starting to shift. In 2017, those companies in the Goldman study that spent more on capital expenditures and R&D outperformed those offering high dividends and buybacks by 11 percentage points. We should note here that when it comes to short-termism, there is plenty of blame to go around. And some of that blame can actually be traced to the C-suite. Yes, the investment community and meddlesome activists are certainly part of the problem, but the very same FCLT survey that revealed the increasing short-term pressures facing CEOs also found that nearly two-thirds of those CEOs said the pressure to deliver strong short-term financial performance stemmed from their own board and their own executive team. In other words, some of the short-term thinking we're seeing is actually self-imposed, with CEOs simply getting in their own way. What makes the plague of short-term thinking somewhat puzzling is that, according to McKinsey estimates, 75% of the U.S. market is held by buy-and-hold investors who are actually interested in the long-term value of the companies in which they're invested. Given this, you could argue that CEOs shouldn't be putting so much pressure on themselves to get strong short-term results. At the very least, we posit that they certainly have the power and, indeed, the obligation to ignore some of that activist pressure and start thinking long-term. Yes, it's true that in the short-term, CEOs must still face fierce competition in their industry. And they must still live with the fear that if they don't deliver great returns in the short run, they too might soon become the target of activists. But it is our belief that they must never sell out the next decade in favor of next week. Indeed, as former GE CEO Jack Welch once explained, you can't grow long-term if you can't eat short-term. Anybody can manage short. Anybody can manage long. Balancing those two things is what management is. As Welch understands, it is well within the power of all CEOs to find a happy balance between short-term performance and long-term growth. Getting this right is the ultimate responsibility of all CEOs, and that responsibility extends not only to their shareholders but also to their employees, their communities, and, indeed, the entire world. Why you should read this book. Rampant short-termism should be a concern to all of us because the stakes are so high. We believe that a strategy largely driven by short-term thinking, where the desire for quick profits mortgages the future of a business, is not sustainable, and that the CEOs who engage in such behavior are doing damage to our economy and to society. In fact, we believe that the current short-sighted behaviors of many corporations, both real and the public's perception of it, are helping to erode support for capitalism itself. Whether it is activist investors pushing for short-term profit-taking at the expense of future growth, corporations paying workers below market wages, CEOs engaging in convoluted strategies to avoid paying their fair share of taxes, or managers shirking their environmental and worker safety obligations in pursuit of quick profits, these narrow and self-interested short-term behaviors are making many question the legitimacy and fairness of our free market system. Little wonder that a 2017 survey by the American Culture and Faith Institute found that 4 out of 10 American adults 18 years of age and older prefer socialism to capitalism. The millennial generation is even less enamored with America's economic system. A 2016 Harvard study that polled young adults between the ages of 18 and 29 found that 58% of respondents do not support capitalism. If we are to preserve capitalism, capitalism will need to change. As the prominent Wall Street lawyer Marty Lipton of Wachtell, Lipton, Rosen & Katz puts it, there is a new paradigm emerging where corporations, their CEOs and boards of directors, leading institutional investors and asset managers all recognize that long-term thinking is good for the economy, good for companies, good for shareholders, and good for democracy. This emerging consensus has reached a tipping point, writes Lipton, and decisive action is imperative. From our vantage point, we see, as Lipton does, too many examples of CEOs wasting time and precious resources trying to meet quarterly earnings, engaging in accounting stratagems, and cutting valuable people and projects to please a small group of influential investors on Wall Street. But we've also studied the best of the best, those leaders who know how to run a business that thrives not just for the benefit of shareholders, but also for that of employees, customers, and the communities in which they live. And those are the accounts we'd like to share with you. Today's CEOs need a roadmap to long-term management more than ever before, and that's what we have set out to provide in this book. We go behind the scenes to find out how some of the most successful business leaders of our time have navigated this treacherous landscape. For our examples, we focused mostly on U.S.-based CEOs because that's where the issue feels the most acute right now. But the management wisdom offered here also applies to leaders and companies working around the globe. We believe we're in a particularly good position to draw back the curtain and explain how top CEOs have pulled off this difficult balancing act. One of our co-authors, Michael Yuseem, a professor at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, has researched and written extensively about leadership and management. For two of his most recent books, The India Way and Fortune Makers, he and his co-authors interviewed Chinese and Indian CEOs and witnessed firsthand how they manage for the long term. As a vice chairman of the global executive search and talent management firm Korn Ferry, Dennis Carey has helped select dozens of directors and CEOs of global Fortune 500 companies over the course of his career. He knows firsthand which qualities make for a business leader who knows how to manage for the long term. Rodney Zemmel, the managing partner of McKinsey's New York and Northeast offices in the United States, works closely with CEO clients who are striving to improve their long game and has deep knowledge of what works and what doesn't. Brian Demain, a Fortune magazine contributor, has covered the business world for 3 decades and has a journalist's perspective on what makes a leader succeed or fail. In part one of the book, we profile 5 CEOs and 1 director who have been able to resist today's rampant short-termism. Each has made bold moves that leveraged long-term thinking to win in the marketplace. What do they have in common? They invest heavily in their companies and in their people to create new opportunities and better-paying jobs. They balance the short-term needs of some investors with those of employees, customers, communities, and other stakeholders. Plus, they communicate to their boards, their executive teams, and their investors the idea that the very purpose of their business extends beyond short-term profits. You will learn how CEO Alan Mulally had to make deep cuts and sell off businesses when he was turning around Ford, but he did it while investing boldly in new cars and technologies. To get his team to buy into this kind of radical change, he implemented a very hard-nosed financial formula for long-term growth called profitable growth for all. Wall Street, for the most part, agreed with CVS Health CEO Larry Merlot's long-term strategy of becoming a retail healthcare company. It would not, however, have been the one to come up with the idea of how to go about it. He took an annual revenue hit of $2 billion by declaring his chain would no longer sell cigarettes. The move gave CVS credibility as it transitioned to its long-term strategy of becoming a true healthcare provider. When Unilever CEO Paul Polman came under attack from a private equity firm for investing too much in the future of this consumer goods company, he fought the firm off by being able to link the company's strong stock market performance to his long-term vision to build a sustainable corporation. Its mission? To help alleviate world poverty. Verizon CEO Ivan Seidenberg came under pressure by investors who wanted him to slash costs and sell off businesses. Instead, he invested $150 billion in the business and built two of the nation's largest wireless and broadband networks. After the financial crisis hit, 3M was a likely target for activists because of its lackluster growth and uninspired earnings. Faced with this challenge, CEO Sir George Buckley thought like an activist, found hundreds of millions in cash flow by re-engineering the company's manufacturing logistics, and then used that money to boost R&D spending and unleash hundreds of new products. CEOs who want to go long need directors who get deeply involved in setting a strategy. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise and Costco director Maggie Wilderotter tells how she and her fellow board members help CEOs to get the most out of their boards. In part two, we offer operating principles for leaders who want to start thinking long-term. We hope that this book will act as a guide for executives, directors, and investors who want to learn about the value of long-term investing and how it's done right. We believe that the CEOs profiled here offer valuable lessons for dealing with the quarterly pressures of Wall Street, fending off activist attacks, building a long-term strategy, and executing it with grace under fire. As DowDuPont CEO Ed Breen puts it, focus on long-term value instead of fixating on short-term performance and share price. Make bets that are right for the institution. They should last longer than any CEO. Going long is not an easy task, but it can be done. And the stakes are too high not to try. Part 1. The Secrets of Leaders Who Go Long. Chapter 1. Ford's $48 billion Turnaround. While facing financial Armageddon, Ford CEO Alan Mulally kept a laser-like focus on where he wanted his company to be 5 years out. Ultimately, this helped him make smarter short-term decisions. Everyone is going to benefit if you think of what you're doing as creating value for all. Alan Mulally, former CEO of the Ford Motor Company and Boeing Commercial Airplanes. When Alan Mulally arrived at the troubled Ford Motor Company in the fall of 2006, the situation was even worse than he had feared. The company's once blue-chip stock was trading below $10 a share. Its debt was headed toward junk territory, sales of its profitable SUVs and pickups in North America, staggered by a sudden rise in gas prices, were in freefall, and the company's top brass, embroiled in savage infighting, had been unable to implement a strategy to spark a turnaround. And yet, by the time Mulally left in 2014, he had raised Ford's stock market capitalization by $48 billion. How did he do it? By focusing on the long term. One of the toughest challenges any CEO faces is staying focused on a long-term strategy while having to deal with short-term distractions. Contentious earnings calls, a division whose sales are slipping, a product launch that's fallen behind.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?